If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder. This episode of Weird Things is brought to you by Scam School Book 1, available right now. Folks, it's the compilation of over 80 tricks from the popular web series Scam School, starring Weird Things host Brian Brushwood. The material is from over 200 episodes. There's audio commentary on every trick, over 35 video demonstrations, and it's laid out beautifully. It's absolutely the future of instructional ebooks. You need to see it to believe it. Get all the information at scamschoolbook.com. And by Andrew Maine's Angel Killer, the brand new thriller novella available for only a dollar. In front of security cameras, a tourist vanishes from the top of the Empire State Building and mysteriously falls to her death moments later in Times Square. A young girl dies crawling out of her own grave after having been declared dead a year earlier. On Fort Lauderdale Beach, a missing World War II airman and his aircraft show up as if he only died hours before. They call the mysterious man behind these unnatural events the Warlock. To some, he's a messenger of a modern age of miracles. But to Jessica Blackwood, FBI agent and daughter of a legendary magic family, the Warlock is a trickster and a murderer, and she's the only one who can see through his deceptions. Angel Killer is available now on Amazon for only 99 cents. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com. Hello and welcome to yet another edition of the Weird Things podcast. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of WeirdThings.com. And unfortunately, we are yet another week without Andrew Maine, but our normal cast of characters is still partly assembled. Brian Brushwood, welcome back to the show.
See, I like to call this the B-Team Files. This is what happens when Andrew leaves the country and we're left to our own devices. This is like... We put on shoe polish mustaches. We strut around in his obscenely tall pants. And we pretend to be grown-ups.
Absolutely. Andrew was on his way to Israel last week, and this week he is literally on over the Atlantic Ocean coming back. But joining us, because we are contractually obligated to have a brilliant podcaster in his stead, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Merritt.
Yeah, Scott Johnson couldn't make it, but I'm happy to be here anyway, since you needed a brilliant podcaster.
You know how close that is to actuality, right? You know that actually is.
I hadn't thought about Johnson it when I started saying it, but it is true, isn't it?
I'm sure we'll have Scott Johnson on at some point. We're sorry that Scott wasn't available. But Tom, we're thrilled to have you here.
I'd like to apologize to everybody that Scott wasn't here to make this a good show. So, sorry.
You do the best you can.
Just go ahead. That's a big fat sorry burger
everyone
for
down,
me, everybody.
And that's okay.
Well, now listen, as we speak right now, the Avengers has completely assembled themselves all over every box office record.
Dude.
Without ever saying Avengers Assemble.
Did they ever say Avengers Assemble
nope.
in the movie?
Not
they don't?
Once.
Oh, man.
Well, the count stands at $207 million over a three-day period. It is absolutely a juggernaut, although they can't say juggernaut because those characters are owned by 20th Century Fox and not Marvel Disney. But, Brian, you just walked out of the movie. We will probably do – I'm sure we will talk more about the Avengers when Andrew comes back and sees the movie. But – real quick, snap judgment, Brian. What were your thoughts?
It's like my childhood made me a movie, and it was called The Avengers. And amazingly, the entire thing was, and I tweeted this, I said it was like a chess match against my cynical adulthood. Everything that I think couldn't be done, you can't make Captain America look plausible in a world where there's the Dark Knight and everything's hyper-realistic, he's going to look silly. And instead, they do a fantastic job of casting him as, you know, as the heart of the team, in the leadership role. He's got what matters, you know? And likewise, you know, you think it's like, oh, what, they're just suddenly Thor is supposed to be a god, come down to New York to have a hijinks, and then they do a great job of phrasing things, saying, you know, oh, he's not from around here. I mean, the whole thing, everything that would start to make you cringe about a comic book movie, the Avengers was able to frame in such a way where you buy into it 100% from beginning to end, and it was pure joy. My face literally hurt from smiling so hard by the time the movie was over.
Tom, did you see it yet?
I did. I saw it on Friday night. Friday night, I went right out to me. I have to say, if my childhood made a movie, it would probably be Sophie's Choice. But that's neither here nor there. I really enjoyed The Avengers. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I was worried because so many people had said how good it was. And you know, that always like sets your expectations up, and then you come out, because Cabin in the Woods happened with me. So a lot of people said they loved it. And I went in and I was like, oh, it was a pretty good movie, you know? And I was worried about that, but it didn't matter. It was so good that I don't feel bad telling people how much I loved it, because you're going to go in and you're just going to love it. And Scott Johnson and I were talking about this. There were places where you're like, I shouldn't be smiling at that. That was a cheesy line. But Joss Whedon somehow, in his brilliance of direction, pulls it off to where you're like, yeah, but it fit perfectly.
This is that thing that I was talking to you about, where I'm the only guy who liked Batman Begins more than The Dark Knight. And it's because of those moments where I find myself questioning little things like Two-Face can't make that syllable with half a lip. And I put the blame for those moments squarely on the director, because my previous example was always like Men in Black was always able to make me not care about little things because they laid out the rules of the game early on and I bought into it and I had a blast. And the Avengers did that to a T. It's amazing to see how the entire movie is sort of this collection of little 90-second It's a collage of these 90-second vignettes where maybe it's two team members teaming up. It's they set up these themes that keep getting brought up again. It was written in many ways like a comic book, where you only have a little bit of time and space to get in some significant dialogue. So you got to make it poignant and make it punch and then get out. And then they do that. And it's awesome. And the extraordinarily novel fight sequences, the team-ups that you see, it was fantastic.
All right. Well, let me ask you guys this. There is part of the success of the Avengers that is obviously how it was put together. The script that was written, the actors that were cast, and the director that oversaw the project and made the finished product that we all enjoyed. Part of it is also the kind of raw ingredients, the characters of Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Nick Fury, S.H.I.E.L.D., all of these mythos. And I don't think that this would be as successful. It could be a huge movie, but I mean, this is a Star Wars level kind of blockbuster success for this particular film. My question to you guys is, are these characters specifically, I'm just going to talk about the Avengers, not necessarily even comic book canon or Marvel canon, but the Avengers, where do these rank in not only our own pop culture? Is it as important as Star Wars? And beyond that, is it are these modern tales of gods, you know, our modern myths?
Well, I think that a case could be made that the Avengers tracks to a lot of the classic archetypes of, you know, of religious storytelling, or mythic storytelling. How about we do that instead? Like you've got your Captain America, who's the heart of the team, the leadership, the ideal. I mean, it's amazing to me how many times the character is way in over his head, but just gives no thought and dives right in, having no idea if he'll survive. And then you got the brains with Tony Stark, but he's also very flawed individual, and that he's so proud and he's got the hubris. You got the the dark rage that lurks within you with the Hulk that you try to contain, but that from time to time you just want to let out and let fly with. Beyond that, it starts to fall apart. I don't know what.
Yeah, where's the horror? That was Cabin in the Woods. Never mind.
Yes. That'd be a good mashup film to do. You got to slay the Avengers.
We have the Fool, Tony Stark.
Yes, exactly. But I
Tom, what do you think? Is this as big as Star Wars? Are the Avengers as important of characters as Star Wars?
This might be as big as Star Wars, sort of played out in reverse. That's what's interesting is one of the reasons the Avengers is so good is because they built it up for you. They didn't have to spend a lot of time explaining who Tony Stark and Iron Man is because you've seen Robert Downey Jr. in two movies now.
Yeah.
They didn't have to spend a whole lot of time with Captain America because they've done that movie. They've done the Hulk. So, you know, we've gotten to know a lot of these characters if we're the people who've seen all the movies. And they can jump right in as like this is the ultimate sequel where we've pulled everything together. I don't think it's the same as Star Wars as far as, uncovering the Joseph Campbell mythologies and displaying them, because we're redoing comics. We're redoing what was done with Marvel. And maybe the underlying Marvel's material has some of that, and I think Brian pointed out some good points why that is, but this is more comic books come to life. And so if there is sort of that modern-day archetype, Jungian or Joseph Campbell type stuff, it's coming from the comic books. I'm not sure that it's actually added to by the movie itself. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Well, but keep in mind, the vast majority of people experiencing the movie have never read the comic book. I mean, maybe we're lucky if half the audience has seen most of the Marvel films leading up to this. So if it stands, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do agree. It's obviously...
No, but Brian... Like, you're confusing the education of having read the books with the inherent value of these characters. These characters are, in part, successful, not because everyone's read every Captain America issue, because they are so awesome, the characters are so awesomely relatable that you can take years off. You can have never read a Captain America book. You can read one Captain America book and immediately be drawn into the characters. And those are the kind of ideals that I think we see in the enduring modern literature, you know, in the characters that we continue to find ourselves coming back to. They're the ones that we can always rely on being there and being accessible. And I think that it can't be sold short for this.
The difference between this and Star Wars is that Lucas's brilliance was that he created a mythology out of whole cloth. We didn't know Darth Vader. It's hard to imagine now, but we didn't know Darth Vader. We didn't know Luke Skywalker. We didn't know Princess Leia. We didn't know anything about the Empire or the Force or Jedi. And so there's something extra magical about that coming out of nowhere. With the Avengers, this isn't a criticism, but it's a different feeling because, Jerry, I think you made a good point there. You didn't have to have read a comic book. You wouldn't have necessarily had to have ever seen a TV show or a cartoon or a movie to know Captain America, to know the Hulk, to probably know Iron Man, because they are part of our cultural mythos.
So
people talk about Captain America, they throw that around. Well, hey, Captain America, you know, or Hulk smash. People say, you know, it's just woven
who
into
calls
our DNA.
Other people
so it's
Captain
a different
America.
Approach when the Avengers comes and we're like, oh, okay, these are these mythic characters that we've already come to know, writ large and seen in action in a new way. And that doesn't undermine your point about the literary underpinnings and the modern mythology. But it's different in the mere comparison to Star Wars, I think.
So I got a weird things kind of question for you guys. Do you think the success and beyond the financial success, the quality of the performance that we got from the Avengers is maybe the result of a type of literary evolution where we had the benefit of 50 years of Marvel Comics trying out all kinds of different hero archetypes, some of which survived, some flourished.
Ant-Man.
Right, exactly. Well, but not only do you have all the characters that came and went in the Marvel Universe, but you also had characters that came and went within the Avengers. The Avengers has had an extraordinarily large rotating cast, and they were able to cherry pick sort of these quintessential six, you know, because you're right, there is no Ant-Man. You don't see Hank Pym. You don't see Vision. You don't see any of the honorary Avengers they could have thrown in there. Yeah, the Wasp as well. Do you think there's sort of an evolution aspect going on?
I think they picked their heavy hitters. I think they picked their best lineup. You know, they picked the lineup that could all do single movies, and that's why we see the ones that are there. And you know, the two that they added that didn't get their own flicks were, or, you know, if not A-list, certainly marquee names to plug into.
Black Widow's an interesting choice, though.
Yeah, she's, but I mean, she has certain assets that she brings to the screen that I think are important. Yeah. You want to have a sexy girl in there, I think is a good idea.
And I do applaud Joss Whedon for not making her the main character, as I'm sure he was just really, really, really excited to do, since he can't seem to write a script without making
a strong female character, the lead
or next to lead, most important.
But I would argue that the Avengers is her story. This movie is her story. I mean, it's
are
not
you
100%.
Joss Whedon?
What?
He asked if you're Joss Whedon. Can you just pull off the mask and reveal yourself?
I wish. I wish I had that money coming in. No, but I mean, it's not the Avengers, the Black Widow story. I get that, but they do most of the telling of story around Black Widow, especially in that first part of the movie.
Yes.
And then it balances out nicely so that you're not sitting there like, oh, so this is just Trojan horse for the Black Widow story.
No, she was given so much more to do than she was in Iron Man 2, where I thought she was a very, very flat character. And really, as soon as she sort of shows up on screen, the Iron Man 2 sort of grinds to a halt. All right, real quick. I have a very quick button question before we get to our next topic. Me and a friend of mine were having a conversation about which Marvel superhero's power we would most like, because we're nearly 30 years old. He is 30 years old and we're unmarried. Hello, ladies.
Well, you got to get ready. You got to get ready, because you never know when you're going to kick over that genie bottle. You don't want to have to sit there and think about it. You only have a few minutes. You got to pick a wish.
Well, here's the deal. All right. So it came to this. We started going all these characters whose power we'd like, and we kept realizing how many of the Marvel superheroes are super geniuses, like beyond like regular, you know, like a smart person or a really smart person.
You got Peter Parker, of course, is smart with the sciences, where he gets the web shooters. You got Reed Richards, so smart he takes his family to go get him irradiated.
Tony Stark,
of course, he outthinks himself. It literally saves his life when he's got the shrapnel and he's a prisoner of war. And
Bruce Banner in Avengers, you know, he's been portrayed a couple different ways, but in Avengers, he is portrayed as the world's leading scientist on gamma radiation.
Sure.
So my question is that level of genius a superpower? And if we are to agree that those people exist on Earth, do we have, in fact, superheroes roaming the...
Well, we already know we have physical, we have actual superheroes. We have people who put on costumes and go out and fight bad guys. These are actual people who exist in America.
Okay. Can you not completely derail the question and answer it?
I'm just saying, like, if the question is, do we have superheroes? Okay, is being smart a superpower? Hell no, not at all. It's not in the least. There, does that answer your question?
So, but like, not like Tony Stark is not smart. Like, he's not like a clever dude. You know, not a dude who does his own taxes and enjoys it. He's like mega, super crazy engineering, like once in a generation genius.
So what? We got Larry and Sergey. I mean, they're not superheroes.
I mean,
they're doing crap every bit as awesome as what's Tony Stark. These guys are making cars that drive
themselves. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson, a guy who can he sucks in space and spits out poetry. I mean, it's like he's not a superhero. Oh,
that's the worst. I mean, come on. This is a kind of genius that can make an iron suit in like a 6-month span and then fly around and shoot missiles out of it and unravel worldwide intrigue is not and as great as Neil deGrasse Tyson and Larry and Sergey are, and they do fantastic things. It's not quite the same, right?
Maybe I'm fundamentally misunderstanding your question, but it sounded like you were asking if we have superheroes who exist today because we have really smart people, and I'm saying they're not superheroes, and being smart is not a superpower.
Justin, their superheroes aren't real.
Another illusion shattered. Here on the Weird Things podcast.
I think that's what Brian's trying to tell you.
Finally. Worked it through my head. All right. Well, I would like to remind everybody that this edition of the Weird Things podcast is brought to you by @DJDiddle_. I don't know why. I think he used to be just DJ Diddle. Now he's DJ Diddle _. But, you know, follow him right there. He just wanted to let us know that we do a great podcast. Keep up the amazing work. Of course, you can get your own Weird Things sponsored spot for only $30. Go to weirdthings.com/sponsor. We thank @DJDiddle for his contribution.
Now that is a superpower. The ability to make this podcast appear to like he somewhere wirelessly transmits money that causes this entertainment to occur in your ears. That's a superpower.
Brian, Tom,
Justin,
you are two friendly co-workers who work in the kitchen.
Say ghosts.
We are friendly ghosts as well. We look forward to being friendly ghosts once we die. Hopefully co-working somewhere.
Co-haunting.
You figuratively haunt. And by haunt, I mean you're gainfully employed at the kitchen of a Hardee's in Kentucky.
I believe this already. This sounds like, man, how old are we?
You are, Brian, you are 38. Tom, you are 16.
Okay. So I'm the old hand. Now, have I been there longer, or am I
60
like
60 or 16?
16. 16.
So, oh, okay. All right.
See, I don't
it's
know.
It's not just a Carl's Jr. It's a Hardee's.
Did we start at the same time, or have I been there for like a decade? I'm going to be like, let me tell you something. I saw that fryer kick over. You don't want to be there.
You might tell Tom that, but in reality, you only got hired like a month before he
Great. Did. No, that's the story. I'm playing the old hand because I can't handle it.
Tom's definitely taken by you, though. Tom really looks up and respects you.
Well, look, listen, when you've been at the Hardee's as long as I have, did I ever tell you about the time that President Barack Obama bought a burger from this very Hardee's?
What?
He wasn't president at the time, but he was a junior senator on a press junket. It was an amazing time.
Kentucky?
Here's the thing, and I said this.
Are we in Purdue? Are we in Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky?
It doesn't matter. The important thing is he asked for
it
a
does
number
for
two.
My attitude towards Mr. Barack Obama.
The important thing was that he asked for a number two, and I said, Barry, you don't want the number two. He's like, I don't. And I was like, no, man, you're a number three, man. And he took the number three, and now he's the president.
Wow.
So just remember that, Tom.
You made him president.
Well, I don't like to take direct credit, but I think, it's just how it happened. Would you clean this up? I'm going to go on break for a second.
Oh, yeah, sure. I got it.
For the record, you are in Olympian Springs, Kentucky.
Okay.
Good. Which is actually...
So you guys are out on a smoke break, middle of a double.
Yeah, it's late.
You ever been to Kentucky Lake?
You look up in.
Did you see
what was that?
Oh, we were just talking about how I could see Sandra's bra strap, which I wouldn't normally check out, but damn, man, Sandra. It was like this bright neon pink in there. Sandy, what you doing to me, girl?
You ever been to Kentucky Lake?
No. What
about Lake Barkley?
Are these like sex moves that you kids talk about? I don't understand. What is going on?
Sometimes the women don't wear any swimsuits.
What?
At Kentucky Lake.
Oh, my God.
They get trouble, though.
It's a clear sky over Olympian Springs, Kentucky, when all of a sudden, Tom, when it hits your face, you don't quite know exactly what to make of it. But upon removing it, you can almost be sure that you just got hit with a piece of brisket that's fallen from the sky.
I'm sorry, brisket? We don't even have brisket on the Hardee's menu. I don't know why. Who shows up with brisket? Did somebody hit you with brisket, Tom?
Have you ever seen Donnie Darko?
Yeah, no, I have. I saw that.
I think that just happened to me, except instead of an airplane wheel, it was brisket.
Well, you realize you now have the ability to travel forward and backward in time until the parallel universe collapses on itself.
But only to eat brisket.
You can alter any barbecue sauce. We need to get you back inside, and you need to invent a new burger while you still have this gift.
I can go forward and tell you what barbecue sauce will be popular on brisket in the future.
That's it. This
Which is- were the last words that Tom said before a piece of raw hamburger meat landed right in Brian's mouth.
What?
As he went to talk.
I'm like, Tom, go!
You know, it's okay to swallow that. The back tea count in raw hamburger meat is not nearly as bad as a lot of people think. Don't choke. Heimlich maneuver.
Did I do it? Wait, now I have power of raw hamburger. I will teleport my raw hamburger into the past.
And that's when the deluge came down.
Meats
of all shapes and sizes pelting the Hardee's, the intersection out front of it, your boss's Jeep, and he left the top down. Tom is circling his head, trying to ensnare.
This is amazing. What do you do when it's just meat is falling from the sky?
Like Pastor McCarran told us about this. It's a sign.
Are you thinking about the bacteria in there, or are you just marveling like it's manna from heaven, or are you just like, this is gross? I want to, my clothes. Is bacon falling from the sky? Any bacon?
So, no. And by the way, this is not cooked. This is all raw meat.
All right. That's not so great.
Brian, at some point you guys get in, you run back into the Hardee's because you're going to get injured by all the velocity on this meat is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that and the fact that our smoke break is over and boss don't like it. Remember last Thursday when we were hanging out there for too long?
But you see on Tom's shoulder just what looks to be as if God put it there for you, Brian.
Uh-oh.
Just a big fat patty. It's a nice little slab of meat.
Little patty O'Brien.
Right
Brian.
There.
Sure.
And you just look at that meat and you look at the fryer and or the grill and you just look at the meat and you look at the grill. Do you put that meat on that grill, grill it up and eat it?
Well, it's clearly a full-on patty, right? And it didn't hit the floor, right?
It landed almost like a parrot to a pirate. It's just sitting jauntily upon Tom's shoulder.
Do we have any...
I want a fry cook?
I mean, my gut tells me if it just came from the sky and it hadn't hit the floor and it's free... Hey, bro, free patty. I mean...
Tom, where are you at?
Patty.
Are you in on grilling this patty?
Yeah, you know it's there. You felt it. Like, are you okay with me eating it, or are you going to try to talk me out of this in your 16 years of wisdom?
Well, if you're going to cook it, eat. That's fine. It'll be fine.
You want to split it? I'll cut it down the middle. Really?
Yeah. Now, Brian, you know that you're a role model to this young, this youth, you know? Like you're going to teach...
man. Tom,
boy, that, you know, it's okay to eat whatever meat falls out of the goddamn sky.
You know what? I'll tell him whatever he needs to hear as long as he keeps hooking me up with weed every Thursday night. That's the only reason I talk to this 16-year-old.
Keep the temperature above 180 degrees. Most of the bacteria will be killed.
See, that's the thing. You just got to see. This is why I keep this kid around. This kid's like Tony Stark. He's Hamburger Tony Stark. HTS, we call him.
So you grill up the hamburger and you eat it. It tastes like either mutton, venison.
Mutton or venison? And it doesn't taste like hamburger?
No.
I thought it was a patty. That's kind of good, I guess. I don't know.
Venison patty.
Did you ever think, Tom, that maybe we'll get superpowers from this meat that came from the sky? This is how superheroes are born. One day, Tom and Brian were out on a smoke break, and Thor's hamburger slipped off of their barbecue and broke into 1,000 pieces, and we took a piece of it, cooked it up, and then we got ambulatory powers where we're shooting hamburgers out of our fists.
Mutton and venison, not ham.
Well, that's what it tasted like. Man, maybe
chicken.
Maybe we could be Vinny and the Mutt. Because, like, I got the venison powers and you got the mutton powers.
Vinny and the Mutt.
Yeah.
I have the power of wool.
You have the power of wool. I have the power.
I can wick away moisture and still keep you warm.
I have the power to bolt and then, I periodically grow thorny horns. Antlers, they're called.
None of that happens. You just ate a weird piece of meat that fell from the goddamn sky, which is exactly what happened in 1876 when a shower of 3-inch chunks of meat rained down from a clear sky over Olympian Springs, Kentucky.
Shut up! This happened!
The Louisville Commercial reported that two gentlemen, quote, who tasted the meat, expressed the opinion that it was either mutton or venison.
So where on earth did they ever figure out where it came from?
All right. Here is the only theory that's been floated on this. Are you ready?
In Kentucky Lake. Yes,
where they don't wear a lot of clothes.
A scientist at the Royal Microscopical Society of Great Britain theorized that buzzards had feasted on dead horses, flowed over the town, and vomited.
I regret instantly my decision to eat that wasn't Thor's hamburger. That was buzzard carrion vomit. Are you kidding me?
You know, as long as we cooked it at a high enough temperature, it doesn't really matter.
Okay, fine. Stop talking. This is nobody. I regret this decision instantly.
Why would buzzards vomit patties?
Or drop
the patties. That was a little artistic license, Tom.
Where is that to put it? They really ate it.
I rest
it,
my case.
Did they eat it?
Yeah, no. They absolutely ate them. This came from a list from a Popular Science, which put up a whole bunch of the weirdest things that have ever randomly rained from the sky, including a 2009 rain of frogs in Japan, not to be confused with the 1999 rain of frogs in the movie Magnolia.
Right.
Totally. And different. A squid that fell on a dude so hard in 1997 randomly from the sky that it put homeboy in a coma for 2 days.
Man, I really thought I was going to have power over hamburgers, and instead...
What year did this venison-like horse vomit?
1876.
Clearly that's why we were confused by your story. Hardee's was burger chef in 1876.
Would you be a great time for us to remind you that Box Office Bookie is a new browser-based game that allows players to bid and earn points on this season's upcoming movie releases. Play it for free at boxofficebookie.com. Folks, if you've listened to me, Tom, and Brian do the NSFW frame rate fantasy movie league draft and subsequent all of our jostling on Twitter, that's basically what it is. Head on over to it, boxofficebookie.com.
Too late to get the Avengers.
I think you might have, like, because he's doing a different take on there. I think you might be able to buy and sell movies even after you have results from them. I know that's great about the idea of this.
Go buy the Avengers.
Yeah. It's not too late. It's going to have staying power, too, I'm sure.
It's probably really expensive right now, if that's the way.
Short I have a question Avengers. Of scientific ethics for the two of you.
probably not
illegal, but possibly ethical. Oh wait, no, that's a different show. Never mind.
A man named Luke Tipple teamed with one of the most interesting companies in the geek tech sphere.
I like that word interesting. That's usually followed by something that you'll regret. Go ahead.
Well, it's Wicked Lasers. We've talked about Wicked Lasers a lot on the site. I don't know if we've talked about them a lot on the podcast, but
Lasers.
They basically make the most high-powered, dangerous lasers you can commercially buy, and have lately gotten into. They debuted on last Friday, May the 4th, because it was Star Wars Day.
Oh no! May the 4th, did they go back to tempt fate with Lucas again? Because they did that original, they had that blue light. They modeled it like a lightsaber, and it looked super powerful.
And this one is like it's a harness, basically, for or a model, an add-on to a regular Wicked Laser that kind of captures it, but gives you probably the most brilliant kind of lightsaber laser light display that you could possibly ask for. But that's not what they did with Mr. Luke Tipple. No. Mr. Luke Tipple, for whom you might remember for his work on Discovery Channel's Shark Week, decided to complete the goal and real true dream of Dr. Evil and laser on a freaking shark.
He put he made sharks with freaking laser beams on their heads?
On their tails, so close enough. Not exactly the true dream, but he did indeed put a laser beam on this shark's tail. You can see the picture at weirdthings.com. Right. However, let me give you a naysay to this entire thing. Okay, I will read you the point of view of one Mr. Neil Hammerschlag, an assistant professor at the Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science. He says,
I thought it was going to be Sharkington, the yes. Lost.
Yes. Edward James Sharkington said, "Hey, what are you doing to my tail, big guy?"
Yes.
No. All right. Neil Hammerschlag said, "Is there a point to it? It has to have an objective. I would say that the attachment process sounds non-invasive. I don't think it's going to cause any damage to the shark, and it is temporary. In terms of the goal, though, without knowing the specific scientific or educational application, it's hard to say. If you did it just to respond to a scene in the Austin Powers movie, I don't see the value. You're just causing unnecessary stress on the animal, and it's not respectful."
Respectful? We're top of the food chain. We eat everyone else. Is it respectful to a tuna to scoop it up in a net and
sharks
cut its
eat
head
us?
Off? Yeah. And plus, the sharks even have it out for us. I remember the Summer of the Shark, 2001. We couldn't get any worse than that.
I would submit to Mr. What's his name? Snugglegross?
Neil Hammerschlag was his name.
Neil Hammerschlag. I would submit to Mr. Hammerschlag that he may logically be correct, but it is no worse than putting clothes on a dog.
Yeah. And you know what? I bet he does. I bet he cuddles up with a dog and has a little Yoda outfit on it, thinks it's so adorable. Then I'll tell you what, you cross the board. You think, you know what? It's why are you giving your dog a
purr? You think Neil Hammerschlag is like he takes his shirt off and wanders around the woods with his dog dressed like Yoda and just reenacts like the entire Dagobah scenes in total.
He probably puts the dog on his back, which is even extra stressful.
The dog's over there barking. He's like, "You're right. I will only take what goes in with me to that dark cave.
But they're my friends."
Well, I mean, to your point, Brian, this was a lemon shark he put this laser on. So it wasn't like he went and put it on like a great white. It was like, oh,
yeah,
like,
these are veggies.
Take this killing machine. Dude, this thing wouldn't lick your toes.
I'm on team human. And
this
team
is like
human,
this is like attaching lasers to a freaking salmon. I mean,
that's right.
Not...
That's good. Let's also attach lasers to salmon. I can think of no animal that humans do not have the inherent right to put a laser on. Name one. Attach a laser on
other humans.
Yes. Attach lasers on other humans. What? Short circuits.
No, I mean, I get what the guy's saying, right? It's like, well, if you're stressing out an animal quite a bit or causing some harm just to imitate a movie, maybe it's not such a great idea. I think there's a different level of ethics for someone in a television presenter position who's trying to advocate possibly for the preservation of a species to consider that versus us. If we're like, oh, I happen to keep a lemon shark in my pool, so I attached a laser to his fin. It was kind of funny. That's to me like dressing up a dog in clothes.
All right.
On the other hand, someone who's out there trying to get the message across of, you know what, sharks need to be treated with respect. They're not killers. They're getting a bad name. And then you add lasers to their fins. Arguably, that'll gain you a lot of respect with a certain quarter. But is it at the expense of another quarter that says, wait a minute, now I'm not sure I buy your message because you're the guy who put lasers on a shark.
And Tom has hit exactly at the heart of this. The issue here for Tipple is that his main source of influence is the fact that he's on the Discovery Channel as an expert on sharks, and he has to keep good standing with the educational world of marine biology, and this is maybe something a little frivolous. Tom, like, let's say, for example, obviously what happened with this Luke Tipple guy is Wicked Laser says, oh my God, remember that scene from Austin Powers? Let's find the guy from Week and get him to put a shark on a laser on a friggin' shark. Our laser, our name gets out there. They cut Luke a check and everything goes on. Like, let's say Wicked Laser came to you and said, man, it'd be really, really great if, like, while she's not looking during recording for the video version of Sword and Laser, you stuck a laser on Veronica Belmont and just kind of left it there for a little while and just, you know, see how she reacted.
My position still totally unchanged. I think there's every right, and it's good for the world if this happens.
I want to know how much stress the lemon shark actually feels from a laser attached to it. I mean, is it worse than a tag? They tag sharks all the time.
Yeah, and they're all high and mighty talking about how great their tags are.
That actually was what Tipple said. He said that the mount he was using to attach the laser was a new kind of non-invasive mount that could hopefully help to continue to advance. That would be a new element of tagging that would be a better non-invasive solution to tagging, and that was how we kind of wrote off wanting, you know, like, oh, but just this time I put a laser on there because that's
instead
hilarious.
Of a tag, I stuck a laser on there. The shark didn't know the difference.
I can't believe how much things have changed in just 35 years. Do you know what we were doing 35 years ago? We were making a little movie called Kingdom of the Spiders starring what's his name? Captain Kirk. What's his William Shatner. Did you ever see this thing?
No.
I watched this thing as a kid, and I watched it again as an adult, and I remember halfway through it showing a friend of mine, and we were like, hey man, you know, how do you think they dealt with the spiders and keeping them alive? And then the more we watched it, the more we watched spider after spider get squished and killed, at some point we realized I think they killed so many freaking spiders while shooting this show.
I kill spiders every day.
Yeah, but these are like gorgeous, gigantic tarantulas, and they just kill them by the dozen because the idea is like, you know, it's a crazy spider rampage. It's like, how is this? And now we've gotten so soft. Like, I'd love to see where they're shooting with a gun.
I think running over some tarantulas is a lot different than sharks.
No, okay. Tell me which is worse. Running over tarantulas where the tarantulas actually die or attaching a harmless laser to a freaking shark who never knows it and doesn't care. And all he knows is he's waving a lightsaber around with his butt. He thinks it's the best thing that ever happened to his life.
Well,
how do you know that, Brian? Like, yeah, it's not like the shark tweeted, LOL, I got a laser on my butt. Isn't this hilarious? There.
Yeah, no, I just made up a scenario in which that's the case.
Now, let's so whatever you do, don't follow Lemon Laser Pants.
Lemon Shark Laser Pants, is that what you said?
At Lemon Shark Laser Pants on Twitter, who's just having a great time with that laser on his butt.
Yeah. I mean,
hey, man, totally going to check out the Avengers. Hopefully I don't spoil the screen with my laser butt. What up? Lemon Shark laser pan.
I just don't understand that as soon as a camera is involved, everybody gets super sensitive about this kind of thing. It's like, meanwhile, bullfighting is legal. It's like, I mean, this is bullfighting is, no matter how you slice it, horrific and cruel. And we're talking about putting a laser on a shark.
Well, but that's not legal everywhere. I'm sure if you went to the places that bullfighting was legal and you were like, oh, I want to put 14 lasers on a shark and then I want to blow it up, they'd be like, dude, whatever, man. It's Spain.
I know, but the point is,
you can have the lemon shark fight the bull if you want.
All I'm saying is that every effort you put to stopping a laser being put on a shark in America equals many, many bulls getting killed in the other side of the world. So there.
Can't argue with that logic.
Yeah, no, you're right. You literally can't.
Because it doesn't make any sense.
You know what you can do? I could remind you that the College of Curiosity is coming. You might ask yourself, what College of Curiosity? Well, I'm glad you're curious about it. On May 26th, you can join Skeptoid Brian Dunning, mentalist and former Brian Brushwood roadmate Johnny Zavant, noisy astronomer Nicole. Oh, man, I'm going to murder this name.
Brian Dunning's going to be there and Johnny Zavant. When is this?
Noisy astronomer Nicole Gugliucci. I think it's Gugliucci.
It's Ghouli Shark.
Mathematician Ghouli. Ethan Brown and Jeff Wagg, as they present a full day conference. Head on over, friends, to
this sounds epic. When and where?
collegeofcuriosity.com, where you will get all of the deets.
Now, what are the admission standards for this college?
Okay, here's the deal. Adults are only $30. 12 and under are only 15. Your SAT scores need to be at a minimum of 1800. And otherwise, you can look forward to the wait list, mister, because you didn't do your homework.
Ha!
Just kidding. You don't have any.
I put the lasers on those lemon shark tails like you asked.
That's where you failed. You should have refused. Don't you know how cruel this is to the lemon shark? The lemon shark is on the board of directors, and he did not take kindly to your prank.
I'll tell you what. Here's the deal. You just need to be at the City Museum in Tom Merritt's own hometown of St. Louis, Missouri, Saturday, May 26, 2012. Again, head on over to collegeofcuriosity.com.
You got a lot of people who are fans in St. Louis, I'm sure. Get Kuhan out there.
Kuhan.
Giggaloop.
Yeah. So check that out. And Jeff Wagg, who purchased a sponsor spot, thank you very much. And reminder, weirdthings.com/sponsor. Buy your own sponsored spot for $30. They're going fast, folks. Flying off the shelves.
Pop open a stag, eat some toasted ravioli, and head on down to the College of Curiosity.
We've hinted at this before, but Andrew's not here, so I'll go ahead and hint away. But we're not going to say what our numbers are, but we're going to say that there is an exceptional CPM value to the sponsors.
Bigger than the Beatles, baby.
Wait, what did you say? You dropped out there for a second.
Bigger than the Beatles, God damn it. We're blowing up. Let's get into some picks. We talked about the Avengers early, so that's going to be disqualified.
Oh, anybody dang it. I'll tell you what, I'll go ahead and get started again. And I sort of threw it in as a last second thing in there. I mentioned last week that I'm reading on Audible.com, our friends over at Audible, the Iron Druid Chronicles takes place modern day. You got a character who's about 2,100 years old, and it's sort of an American Godsy kind of setup where pretty much every religion and every monster turns out to be real. But some of them are more powerful than others. Some survive, some don't survive. But the way our hero, the main character, has survived is by keeping up to date and blending in with the locals. So because it's important to blend in with the locals, he loves to, he's a druid, takes power from the earth through these tattoos on his body. He's got a psychic connection with his Irish wolfhound named Oberon, who's hilarious. He's got two lawyers. One of them is a werewolf. One is a vampire. And he's got some beef with some Irish Celtic gods who don't like the fact that he stole a sword thousands of years ago. It's so much fun. I'm on the fourth book right now, and they're just candy. I eat them nonstop. My wife, Bonnie, she loved the Dresden Files and finds these to be very similar, but lighter, whereas Dresden got heavy, and there's a lot of, like, cursed souls and sadness and, you know, thinking all the time about how stuff went bad. This one's a lot lighter, and it's a lot more fun. And there's a line, I don't know if this will get bleeped or not, but, you know, he talks about...
Please don't say it. I won't have to edit it if you don't say it.
I can say a D word, right? He says Thor is in there, and all the other gods pretty much think Thor's a big a dick. A douche? you're gonna have to bleep that. Well, it happened at... I'll give you this number.
I had no idea that Thor's first name was Rich.
At 48
minutes. Nice save. Put it in context, Tommy. You got a pick for us?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to pick a musician. And this is a musician who doesn't have a recent album out. And I think we too often fall under the hamster wheel of, oh, we should only recommend something because it just came out. MC Lars may be the most literary white rapper ever.
Yeah.
MC Lars. I'm going to call it and say he is. It's a Latin thing from 21 Concepts, and a hit ain't one of them. Goes from being Latin influenced music with Spanish into talking about the Roman Empire. Hey There, Ophelia is a rap about Ophelia from Shakespeare. Annabelle Lee, RIP. I think that should be pretty obvious to any Poe fan from Lars Attacks. And then This Giant Robot Kills is just a love letter to ska.
That's fantastic.
God damn it. Well, there we go. MC Lars, is there an album that you would recommend? Lars Attacks?
This Giant Robot Kills is my favorite, but Indie Rocket Science, 21 Concepts, but a hit ain't one, and Lars Attacks are all fantastic albums.
Can I actually, I don't think we've ever had a music offering on there, and I know I'm actually going this Friday to go see Roger Waters' The Wall production, which you'll be there too, right, Tom?
Yeah.
So we'll go see that. But all on that same thing, if I could throw a music pick in there, last year or 2 years ago, I discovered, thanks to Johnny Zavant, the mentalist extraordinaire, the Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds, which is a two-disc set. It's a rock opera based on the original 19th century version of The War of the Worlds. Sir Richard Burton does vocals where he narrates a bit, and then you hear some music that'll sort of visualize for you the sound of you know, giant walkers with heat rays blowing stuff up. It's fantastic. I will go back and just sort of right up there with, we'll say, you know, with The Wall, with The Dark Side of the Moon. I would definitely put it's a little dated in the musical style because it's from the 70s. It's got a little bit of a disco lilt to it, but it's immensely awesome.
That sounds great. I'm going to recommend a superhero story. Involves a lot of very well-known superheroes in the Marvel Universe, Joss Whedon.
Wait, you can't do that. Did you just outlawed this?
No, I think that everybody should go run out and spend their hard-earned money on Joss Whedon's run on Astonishing X-Men.
Oh!
Yes, everybody. It's another thing that he did. I really, really love this. I haven't read an X-Men storyline in a while that I really, really liked as much as I did this. It's a lot of the basis of his Astonishing X-Men run was kind of picked from for the last of the three X-Men movies, the one that Bryan Singer did not direct and was pretty crappy. Mm-hmm. A lot of the elements from that were taken from Joss's run on Astonishing, but it's fantastic. It's really, really great. And shockingly enough, guess who the main character is? Kitty Pryde. That's crazy. Joss Whedon made a superpowered female.
Dude, Kitty Pryde was always one of my favorite. She was certainly my favorite X-Men. Maybe one of my all-time favorite characters. Kitty Pryde had one of those real versatile powers that you could just think of all kinds of kooky stuff you could try with. Like, I know at one point there was some bad guys headed towards her, and so she's held out her hand, and then right as the car hit her body, she phased the car so their bodies went tumbling out. It was a cool idea.
Yeah. Dude, it's excellent. It's exceptional. The two that I have, and I think this one comes first, is Astonishing X-Men Unstoppable, written by Joss Whedon and drawn by John Cassidy. So go check that out there, friends. And that about brings us to the end of yet another edition of WeirdThings.com or WeirdThingsPodcast.com thing.
The adventure of the B-Squad continues.
Yes. Next week, I think last week I said next week Andrew's going to be back, and I lied to you because he wasn't back. But,
because we're the B-Squad.
He will be back because he's on his way. He's flying from Israel as we speak. But Tom Merritt, amazing job filling in, as always. Do you have anything that the Weird Things audience would really enjoy?
If you like
swords,
things,
sure.
I don't have anything for you.
Or lasers.
You know what? Actually, one thing I haven't been talking about a whole lot is Tech History Today, which I used to do as a podcast, but I still write on TomMerritt.com. And it's just three things that happened in the world of technology anytime in history, called out with a link to the source. So, because there's a lot of really bad, like, tech history collections out there that are totally wrong, and then they don't source their stuff. So I try to make sure that I source it and say, like, okay, but this is the NASA page that says the launch happened on this day, or here's the actual press release from Apple that says, you know, that this was released on that day. TomMerritt.com, just look for Tech History Today. It comes out every day.
I will say that the season 2 of FSL Tonight is also in the offing, which is a me and Tom project. It's going to get crazy. I would say strap in, kids. If you don't know what FSL Tonight is, then don't get used to knowing, because you won't figure it out. Nobody knows. It's provocative.
It's fantasy. It's sports. But it's not fantasy sports the way you think.
Right.
Yes. You're going to find it interesting.
I just want to pull back the curtain because it's such a good show and it's such a fun idea that it deserves to be accurately sold and described. It's basically, if you are hip to a lot of science fiction, if you're hip to a lot of science fiction, this is a sports cast of a game. You never quite find out what the game is, but as you hear the description of how the games went, you may find a surprising number of references that you get, whether it be locations, whether it be franchises, whether it be wink, wink, nods to scenes and movies and books that you have seen before. It's a lot of fun. I'll tell you what, everyone who listens to it wants to start playing along. The chat room during these live episodes was the most fun because you could see them start to play along with the game. How about that? Is that fair enough?
I'm not sure what he's talking about with the game, Justin, but we are contracted from Dragon Sports Talk Radio to cover the FSL every week. We do a summary of all the games. There's some new teams joining the league after some relegation last year. Rivendell Fellowship, Winterfell Direwolves, Lannisport Lions. So we'll be talking about those in the game. I'm not sure. Brian was making it sound a little
weird. Did I just break?
There.
I broke kayfabe just now, didn't I?
No, it's fine. Brian, just take a nap. Do you have anything you want to mention, Bri?
No, I really don't, man. Scam School Book, of course, is available at scamschoolbook.com. That's all I got for you.
Buy the freaking book, people. His daughters are starving.
Did you announce a date?
Yeah. You know what? We did. June 19th, Scam School Book 2 is coming out. So get ready for that. You better... book two is going to drop. You're not going to have any idea what's going on in the Scam School universe if you haven't read book one. So that's why you got to buy it now.
Catch up.
So that you know. Yeah.
Iron Man 2 or something. You know, no,
exactly.
You're
just like,
get book one.
We're like, yeah, exactly. You're like, eating fire. What? I don't even know what this means.
I'm just gonna read issue 6 of Astonishing X-Men and nothing else. No. Get book one.
Gotta get book one. Yeah, no, that's all I got, man.
All right. Well, folks, that brings us to the end of yet another edition of the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Justin Robert Young for Brian Brushwood and Tom Merritt. Reminding you that next week, when Andrew Main is back on the show, he will let you know it's been weird.
Yeah. You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.